This is How to Business in Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corbett.
And we're back with part two of our conversation on the music director's perspective with Matthew Stevens. Now, in case you missed it, but I'll give you a nice little refresh, we ended last week's conversation talking about audition cuts, 32, 16, and 8 bars. What does that look like when you're constructing a song structure that is going to be of service to you in the audition room? From there, we talked about what does it look like when someone who has done the work is showed up and ready to work and collaborate with the music director in the rehearsal space. Now, as we move on to part two of this conversation, we're going to take it even further. How best to take advantage of music days when you're in the rehearsal process. How strong and wrong will be your best friend in any circumstance, whether it be in a private session or when you're in the rehearsal space on production. I even go as far as to share my own story of what that means and what that has done for me, and how we all have different learning processes and how it will be to your benefit to figure out what works best for you. We talk about that. And we also talk about what does crafting your team look like, your board of advisors for you in your journey in this business. So without further ado, here's part two of that conversation.
And on that note of collaboration, this is just what I've witnessed, and I definitely don't want to put words in your mouth. I sometimes notice that when we are in the audition room, sometimes the music director does not always get as much time with the cast as, say, the choreographer and or the director working on acting, so being somewhat last on the totem pole. How is it that you make yourself or your time as efficient as possible, knowing that you might not get as much time with, because you know how we just, okay, today's just going to be music day, everyone, because, like, clearly we need some work and or we've not gotten as much time as we needed. How do you get as much work and or as much progress out of the work that you do when you have such a limited time?
Well, first off, I've always found a certain amount of irony in the fact that this art form is called, you know, musicals. And the area that gets the least amount of time is the music part of it. Yeah. That's a whole, we could sidebar about that for a long time. I mean, case in point, my most recent contract pre-COVID, I was conducting and music directing Lacage, you know, the wonderful, wonderful Jerry Herman show. And I literally had one day of music, and that's pretty standard on any contract and kind of any level. And, you know, I think it's all about being prepared, you know, just having a clear plan of, I know this song is going to take this amount of time to teach. And I've been around a while. I'm starting to know exactly, oh, this number will take this amount of time. So you kind of just structure the day in a way that just kind of knocks everything out. And basically your whole job is just to get the actors exposed to all the ink on the page. It's not going to be at the performance version, but just so they've seen all of it. And those days are exhausting for actors and MDs. I mean, I don't think I know any MD that likes music day. I mean, some crazy people do, but it gets very exhausting when you're only focusing on one element of the show. You know, generally you like coach a song, then you put it on its feet. So you're exploring the material in different ways, right? On music day, you're just exploring the vocal element. And by the third time you haven't hit that one harmony, you're getting real frustrated. So also tried to, as the MD, set the tone for the room that, hey, it's okay. Once again, a broad brush strokes here. We're just trying to get through this material. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a matter of scheduling the day wisely, that your actors don't get tired or frustrated, and just trying to get through the entire show.
Do you recognize when everyone is not all at the same musical ability in terms of being able to pick up those harmonies and or people aren't as in touch? I mean, obviously you wouldn't have picked them if you didn't think that they couldn't have added some value to the project, but do you recognize when people aren't all at the same musical ability?
Sure. And, you know, casting is such a, you know, piecing together different elements and putting this, you know, beautiful puzzle together. So when I go on to a project, I know oftentimes, you know, there are different levels, and that's totally okay. Just like choreographer. I mean, let's flip the conversation around for choreographers. Mm-hmm. they have the dancers that can kick their feet and, you know, arabesque for days and like kickball changed their lives. But, you know, you also have people who are the movers and kind of the non-movers who might just be the actor singers. And so, you know, like choreo, where you scale the choreo based on who's doing what and which number, from an MD's perspective, I try to vocally track a show in a way that maybe the non-singers are just on the melody or they never feel uncomfortable, you know, and, you know, making sure that they don't feel like they're pulling the production down. I always try to keep it positive, you know, and try to set them up for success, making sure I check in with them, making sure that they have the rehearsal tracks as early as possible. And, you know, I mean, and this is just can full disclosure, perhaps having a conversation of, hey, I'm dancing really hard in this number. I don't know how my vocals are going to be, and having a conversation with the sound designer that, oh, perhaps this microphone is less hot, you know, just to, and that's just kind of a reality of what this art form is, just to make sure that particular performer feels, doesn't feel called out and they feel comfortable in the performance they're delivering.
Segueing into our favorite saying, strong and wrong. Does it, and I, this might be a redundant, if not an obvious question, but from your perspective, does it really make your job easier when you're able to hear people when they're doing things wrong so you know what to fix?
I mean, it does. I think my frustration comes when, you know, it's a note that I've given before. Mm-hmm. If it's strong and wrong after the note, then we have a problem. But
you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I know. Wait, can I just take a quick side note? So for those of you who don't know, Matthew is one of my, I think, call you a coach, and I would also call you a vocal teacher also, but I remember that one day when I sat down with you, I was standing and we were going through some of my material, and I said, listen, just so you know, I have dyslexia, and here's how best I operate. I will do strong and wrong, because we've been working on, your song, Donnie Hathaway, God love him, but it was hard, and I could see, you didn't say it, but I could see your frustration building, and I was like, okay, I just have to address this, and I don't think it was anything that you did or it was anything that I did per se, but I hadn't been as secure enough within myself to say that, hey, here's how best I learn and I will be strong and wrong. And once I had said that to you, oh my God, it was so much easier. And you were able to pick, okay, here's the sections that we need to work on. And, or here's this part of the song of which needs a little bit more work, Corbin. And I was like, okay. I think it's an insecurity. I think it's very hard to admit when you don't know and when you're embarrassed. Cause I think a lot of it is like, you're embarrassed cause you can't do it as perfect as he wants the first time or she, or you can't do it as accurately or purely, or you don't hear the notes the same way. And especially for someone who's not as musically gifted as you are in that way, that can be a bit daunting. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. And listen, you know, that I'm so glad you're bringing that up because like I'm in a private one-on-one coaching, we get to know each other in a different kind of way. When you're on a production, people function, you know, in tiers and whatnot, but like when we're in a room together, we need to be open about these things. So I love that we had that moment. And it was a moment of growth for the two of us. Getting to know you, as they say in the King and I, you know, and I think what it, from my end, it's a matter of, well, did they know they screwed that up? Because sometimes, you know, a lot of times you do, but sometimes perhaps people don't. And so you have to kind of like do some mental gymnastics to figure out the best way to approach this. Be like, hey, are you aware of this? And you don't want to be condescending about it. But once again, back to the things I said earlier about making it about the work and it's not personal. Right. But, you know, I remember some of our sessions, you know, I remember you were saying, I don't know, am I the quirky sidekick or what? You were trying, you got so obsessed with your typing. I was like, listen, from a vocal standpoint, what do you love to sing? Like, and I, once we finally broke that down, I will never forget the session you and I had where finally I was like, what about Lizzo? And finally we brought in some Lizzo and you connected with that because I was like, your energy in the room is like yellows and oranges and reds and it's so positive. And I was like, let's fuck it up. You know, I don't know if we can swear on this podcast.
Yeah, we can. They groan. They all groan.
Great. Well, it was a matter of when you brought that into the room, I was like, yes, I'm fully seeing you now. And I'm hearing your voice in a way that's free and open and telling me, checking so many boxes, and you're having a good fucking time. So that was a win.
Well, and then I remember also you had asked me, you know, who do I resonate with? And I am a bit of an old soul when it comes to musically. Like, I love, like, Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole and all that stuff. But that's not relevant in the audition room unless it's that kind of show, right? And then you said, okay. I don't remember if you specified this way, but I think you just said, if I was a producer and I said, who are your musical tastes? And I said, Celine Dion, Adele, and Lizzo. And then it just, the world kind of opened up from there. But I told you the story about Hamilton, right? And how all that went down.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, that was the best thing that could have ever have happened. Like, and I will relay that story again in a different time, but that just goes to show, which ties into my next question. Can you tell when someone isn't comfortable with the material that they've brought into the room? I know back to the audition, but it's just coming up to my mind now. Does that really show to you when someone's not, I'm not seeing you in the song?
Oh yeah. I think I see that especially not so much in what's in people's book, but at that point, if it's in your book and you're at an EPA, you kind of, you know, you should have your sense of what you're
about. Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's more in the callback, when you're at that next, next level of the audition process. I think, a lot of times people feel like they have to hit these marks, or, they kind of assume that you know what the team wants.
Yeah.
And so it becomes less organic and, kind of methodical.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think sometimes, the boldest, most interesting choices are the most rewarded, even if it's not what the team wanted. The team, like, hey, that's really interesting. Now, keep some of that, but perhaps try some of this as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a matter of, you know, I think that once again, that flexibility factor. And, you know, of course, we could see the preparation. Like, if the preparation hasn't been done, then, mm-hmm. That can be a variety of factors. Perhaps you have a part-time job. But also, if you just have issues like learning material and absorbing and memorizing, you know, you don't have to be fully off-booking and callbacks, of course. But, you know, that's something as a part of the craft and the trade that we do. You got to figure out how your brain works to absorb material. So that way you are freed up when you come into that callback round.
Unless it is already an established show and therefore the music's been out there for some time and you can do your own research and, you know, become as familiar, as comfortable with the material as possible. When it is like, say, a new show that's in development and or new show, because sometimes, if I can be honest, sometimes these mini tracks are not all that helpful. And you are left to the wind. And you have tomorrow to get it. How easygoing and or understanding will you be if someone's not done the work and if there are some odds against them? If there are some odds against them. Again, assuming that it's not an established show and that clearly they should already know this material.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I love new work. I mean, and I think it's an exciting time for actors to work with, writers and just kind of explore material. Like, I love that workshop, that 29 hours, you know, kind of incubator for shows. But absolutely 100% hearing you on like sketchy MIDI tracks. Sometimes the sheet music is just like lead sheets. Like, really, not great stuff. Even when I'm the rehearsal pianist, like, that's not previously affiliated. I walk into a project, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, we all have to kind of adapt and just kind of try to figure out the vision. So, in answer to your question, I think, I think teams are aware that this is new and probably hard for actors. And a lot of times, I've seen with new projects, people do start with stuff from their book and then you do the number from the quote unquote new show. So at least what that allows is for a team to see a fully realized performance by this performer and then dive into the material. You know, and unfortunately there's really no control as a performer you have over the quality of the materials that get sent to you. That's a given. But what you do have control over is how often you've listened to that MIDI and like just tried at least making sure you have the tune in your brain. And even if some like lyrically some elements aren't quite right, if we can tell if the work has been done.
Yeah. You know,
even if you don't feel like this is your best quality work, it's evident to the team how much work you put in.
Mm-hmm. So that, which I think this is going to be a very important question, I think at least it was for me. How important is it to have, whether it be your vocal coach or your vocal teacher or just an accompanist who you work with, How good is it to have at least a few people on hand, knowing that people have lives, schedules, and other things outside of you? How important is it to have multiple people on hand that you could reach out to at a moment's notice?
Mm. Oh my God, it is crucial. I'm doing praise hands over here because like, it's so important to have people in your corner. You know, you have to have, your board of directors, your closest artistic confidants who can help you out in these situations. So you need your vocal coaches, your accompanists that you can call, be like, hey, I have these tracks, but they're not great. Can I just send you the scores for this new project and can you record them? And like, just so you have another option, or, hey, I would love to meet with you in person. Let's like plunk through this. Help me, you know, get this more material more in my body. Are you available today? You know? And I think we all miss those days when we had that, you know, kind of quick driving, you know, turnaround for projects. And you have to have those people to help you absorb material. And that's just, that is what it is, unfortunately. But I think there's a kind of excitement that, you know, you have, like, I believe deadlines forces creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, knowing I have to perform this in 24 hours forces you as a performing human to like figure out, absorb it, synthesize it, and then deliver it somehow.
Yeah. Get your life together. So this is a question I really wanted to ask. When you do have those people on hand, being that, you know, New York is, or as I've said before, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in Atlanta, LA, Toronto, Vancouver, Chicago, wherever in those major markets, because it is so expensive to be in those cities and you're attributing your funds to any which way, what is a reasonable, speaking in terms of the world of pricing now, that you feel as though an accompanist should be able to afford to their clientele, whether it be half an hour or an hour working with people?
Yeah, you know, I can't speak to regional markets to know where the pricing is. But what I can say is, I think context is important. If this is a last minute thing, you know, and I already happen to be available at a studio, like, we can cut you a deal, or I'm happy to do a 30 minute rather than a full hour session if it's just on a short amount of material. You know, I think context is crucial to all this kind of stuff. Whereas if like we are doing the work, like I'm vocal coaching, we're doing some like unpacking some text, some, you know, like coaching type work in addition to laying down tracks. I mean, that's a longer session that needs to be a full hour, and that pricing is going to be different. Whereas, you know, you also have the option of not even meeting in person. If you just need tracks, like that pricing is going to be different. I think the pricing is all in relation to the quantity and the quality of the work that's being done, you know?
Yeah.
So it just depends, I feel like. And I think any responsible collaborative artist will like understand the actor's predicament and like want to be there for them. But we also have to defend ourselves and making sure that, you know, we are being taken care of as well, because, you know, it's easy to get walked over by, you know, not everyone, but there's some bad apples out there. And so we all have to kind of protect ourselves.
Yeah. Also, I think maybe it's a little bit of an etiquette thing, like having respect for your time and what you do, because I think people always get funny with money. Because, you know, listen, I'll always be the first one to ask you, how much do I owe you? You let me know and you're like, oh, no, that's fine. We got to say, no. You let me know how much, you go. Come on. Because, I mean, and essentially, like, as you just said, your board of many directors, like, you're a valuable asset in my team who's helps me book a lot of work. And so, like, I have to give credit where credit is due. Like, listen, I didn't do this by myself. I recognize the value in which you play in my life. Like, come on. But I think also I have an added benefit because, as we've been talking about the director's perspective, you obviously know you're multifaceted and you're an uber talented individual, but you offer, for me at least anyways, a unique perspective that a normal accompanist / pianist might not, because you're in the room and you're present to see these things, what works and what doesn't work and what is overdone maybe and what is new. Because hence back to the Lizzo, when I had done that for Chelsea, casting was like, oh, this is the first time I've heard this song. Wow, kudos. And then I did it again and nailed it. So as we're wrapping this up now, during the current state of the world from a business perspective, how has this changed the world of musicians going forward? Or how will this change the world of your fellow musicians going forward?
Listen, I wish, I mean, we all wish our crystal balls were working right now. My crystal ball's in the shop and I'm probably not going to get it back. So like, I wish I had like one clear soundbite to give you. But what I can say is video auditions are going to be your friend. So make sure you have a good home setup. Because the few projects I have been kind of on board with post COVID have all been just video submissions. So I think we have to get used to this idea of creating art in a vacuum or without other humans around, and figuring out how to, you know, stay on top of our craft during this time, you know. And I think, you know, it's easy to get down on ourselves when we're being lazy or not creating every day. And I think, you know, mental health is important. So we shouldn't be down on ourselves when we're not creating, but do the work when it is asked of us. And, so I think we need to get used to online submissions. I think we need to get used to the idea of a lot more two-hand or one-man shows. Maybe it's now a good time for people to workshop their one-person cabarets. I don't really know. We need to make sure that we're having those small projects that sustain us until we have the 42nd Streets back and all the, you know, those big production type shows.
So as we are now down to our last couple questions. First of all, thank you so much for this. I found this to be a very insightful discussion, just because I think sometimes we see the 1%, which is the finished product, and we don't see the 99% that you as a music director do pre and then later post. And I think this is just, it's very all encompassing. So thank you for that. What would older you, or excuse me, mature you say to younger you who's just now starting out?
Oh man. You know, I think it's really funny. I started watching Encore on Disney Plus, and they have the same moment. it's a great show. Little plug. Everybody should watch it. You know, I think don't be afraid. I think so many of our decisions are based in fear or not knowing if it's going to work out. Just live without fear. You know, and do that one thing that scares you, you know, submit for this project, or, you know, don't be afraid of saying yes, because the voices in your head can be your worst enemy and you have to turn those off. So just do it. Don't be afraid.
Now, if I could give you unlimited funds and or wishes and or just an absolute guarantee, hypothetically, what do the next 10 years look like for Matthew Stevens?
Oh my goodness. Well, obviously, listen, I'd love to be on the podium conducting a Broadway show. But that aside, I think I would love, I've been more interested in producing and creating opportunities for artists. My biggest thing in New York since I've been here for the 8 years that I have is been new work development. Listen, with unlimited funds, if I could go upstate on a farm and like open up an outdoor amphitheater performance venue that's also an artist colony, where people can collaborate and meet and network and develop. I would love that. Mm-hmm. That would be the dream for me and I have a classical music background. So if we could have chamber music and like, you know, a black box for contemporary plays and new, just kind of how all those worlds can work together. I would love to like produce and, you know, run a venue. I think that would be incredible and offer opportunities for new artists. I think that's crucial. I think that's how we keep New York vibrant, and not just New York, but listeners everywhere. I mean, new work is happening everywhere, but we need places that facilitate that kind of collaboration.
Okay. Well, I think that is a busy next 10 years and I can't wait to see it happen. Last question, where can the people find you? Obviously not physically, but on social media.
I'm on the socials. I'm on the Instagrams at NPSCanada. I mean, if you're ever in Astoria, Queens, give me a buzz. But yeah, I'm on Instagram at Mass Pianist. It'll be just a lot of hiking content, maybe some cooking content. Yeah, reach out. I'm available for coachings online via Zoom or perhaps distantly in person if we're all safe. But I am open to coachings and also doing artistic consulting and career counseling and music advice. Or if you just want to talk, you know, times are crazy right now.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.